Good morning, everyone. My name is Donnie Carroll, and I am White Mountain Apache and Navajo from Arizona, and I currently work with the Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health site located on the Fort Apache Indian Reservation. So I work on a variety of different nutrition initiatives through our center, and one of our major partnerships is with our tribal farm, which I'll be discussing today. And unfortunately, the staff from the farm could not come to this conference, so I'll be presenting on their behalf. I have no relationships to disclose. So, to give a brief overview of the history of Native food systems, there have been many policies and events that have happened to tribes throughout the United States that have greatly impacted their food systems. So relocation policies, when tribes were, or reservations were established, that dramatically changed how people were getting their food. Also when different tribes experienced the relocation where families were sent to different urban centers across the country, and Chicago was actually one of those urban centers that some people were relocated to from reservations. Assimilation, so as many of you are aware, many tribes underwent the boarding school era, where a lot of children were sent to boarding schools, and that really changed families and their diets and how a lot of children were eating at the time. And also a termination policy, so a lot of historical trauma in tribal communities that has greatly impacted our food systems. Some examples of these are, in the 1800s, bison or buffalo were systematically slaughtered, forcing many of the Plains tribes through starvation. So that was their major food source, and that was taken from them, and that dramatically changed their lifestyles. In the 1830, the Indian Removal Act forced hundreds of thousands of Native peoples off their land with the promise of education, health care, and food rations. So that's where the food rations programs began. So a lot of the commodity foods were introduced to a lot of tribal communities, so a lot of processed foods. So that really changed how people were eating and how people were getting their food, and a lot of the cultural traditions and customs that went along with food in many communities. So today, 60% of current cultivated crops were first domesticated and developed by indigenous peoples. So that kind of gives you an idea of the impact that indigenous peoples have had on food throughout the world. So existing tribal food policy, this is a growing area in throughout Indian country. So a lot of tribes are taking this on themselves to actually create food policies for their tribes. So they come through like agricultural extensions. So a lot of universities are partnering with tribes to kind of help them develop their agricultural infrastructures. There's garden initiatives. A lot of tribes have started community gardens, family gardens, school gardens, food policy councils. A lot of tribes have developed their own food policy councils. So actually developing food codes and food policies for their tribes to follow. Farmers markets, our community, we have a farmers market every year, and some tribes are doing really well with selling their own native grown foods. So like wild rice up in Minnesota, that does really well, and different types of foods. Farm to school programs, more tribes are working towards sourcing more local foods to their schools, so that's an important area. There are also a lot of locally driven nonprofit organizations that are working on food policy and food sovereignty. So TOCA, which is the Tohono O'odham Community Action Group out of Arizona, they do a lot of great work with their own foods and like seed sovereignty. Natani Coalition, they're with the Hopi tribe. They do a lot of great work with like cultural preservation and teaching their community members about farming and gardening. The White White Earth Land Recovery Project. They also do a lot of great work with food sovereignty, and they've developed their own food policy codes. So some tribal food policies have been developed. Some tribes have been successful in doing this. A recent example that has came about is the Navajo junk food tax. So the Navajo Nation Council actually passed a resolution that would allow the tribes to place a 2% junk food tax on any unhealthy food sold in stores on the reservation. So I think they're still trying to figure out where those proceeds will go and how they'll benefit the tribe. This is kind of the buzzword right now with food movements throughout tribal communities, so actually moving tribes towards food sovereignty. And so basically food sovereignty is the ability for tribes to feed their own people without relying on outside resources. So our tribe, these are farmers that work at the local farm, and they're really a driving force of this whole movement of providing local foods for our community. And food sovereignty is more than just providing nourishment, like physical nourishment for people. It's actual like cultural health and spiritual health, all these other dimensions of health that it impacts. So the White Mountain Apache tribe, we're located in Northeast Arizona. We're in the top 10 of U.S. tribal nations in total land area and tribal member, fourth largest tribal member population. Over half of our population is under 30 years old, so we're a very young tribe. Some of the food and nutrition services that are available to tribal members are the food distribution program on Indian reservations, so a lot of the commodity foods come out of this program, but they're also starting to offer more fresher foods, which is good. SNAP, so food stamps, a lot of families rely on food stamps to get their food throughout the year. WIC, which is for mothers and their children up to the age of 5. So in terms of food access, so the food system was very different before the reservation was established. A majority of the Apache food supply came from gathering wild plants, and the remaining came from like people growing their own foods like corn and squash. And an interesting fact about the pre-res era is that leaders were chosen based on their abilities to provide food for their people. So that's changed a lot from to today's current food system. And so the military came onto the reservation, and that had a dramatic impact on people and actually being confined to the reservation because they couldn't go out and get their food like they used to. And that's resulted in a lot of the high rates of diet-related diseases in our community, so diabetes and heart disease. And our communities experience limited access to healthy foods, so what we think of as a food desert is what a lot of our tribal communities experience. Some communities have to travel over an hour to a grocery store, so it's a major issue. So history of our water. Our tribe has had a very interesting history in terms of like water rights issues. The tribe has a lot of influence in the state because a lot of the water that goes to like Phoenix and different cities in Arizona, it comes from our tribe in our area. So the tribal farm was established in the 80s through an economic grant, and the main purpose of that program was to actually grow hay for profit, so actually bringing in revenue for the tribe. And the farm slowly kind of dwindled out for a while until around 2005, when the tribe began to quantify their water rights and really began to reevaluate what types of the ways that the tribe was using their water. And so the tribe's hydrologists and the water rights team recognized the farm as a good entity that could use water in more effective ways for the tribe. So that's where the farm kind of was reborn. And in 2009, they partnered with our center and our Peace for the Future program to really begin to revitalize Apache farming and agriculture. So in Debikia, the People's Farm, it's a 960-acre farm, and six of those acres are for the actual garden. They have a solar greenhouse, high tunnels that allow them to grow throughout longer time periods throughout the year, a community learning center. And one of the great things about the tribal farm is that they really respond to the needs and concerns of the community and tribal government. So they're actually listening to community members and what they want in terms of fresh produce. So those are examples of some of the foods that they provide, like our traditional Apache corn, fruits and vegetables. And they're the main supplier for the annual farmers market. So the farmers market happens every summer, and they supply most of the produce for that. And a major attribute of the farm is that everything that they grow is organic. So they're actually able to provide organic produce to community members at a low cost compared to what maybe you would pay like at a store like Whole Foods. So their costs are a lot cheaper through the farm. They also provide farmers workshops and education for community members. So people can come and learn about farming and gardening and how they can do that, and maybe building a garden for their family. And a lot of these workshops focus on traditional Apache food systems and how that works, and kind of bringing that knowledge back. They provide internships for high school and college students, so they can actually come to the farm and work there throughout the summer. There's also opportunities for substance abuse recovery and behavioral health program clients to work at the farm. So the farm is more than just a place that people grow their food. It's kind of become a healing center. So people that have mental health issues come to the farm, and they really enjoy working there. And they also get a lot of visits from local schools and youth organizations throughout the tribe. So the farm was recently awarded their GAP certification. So they became the first tribal farm in Arizona to receive this certification through the USDA and possibly the nation. So this really helped them create robust procedures and guidelines for the ways in which they were growing their foods, how they were handling the food, and it really helps them with increasing the quality of their produce and opens doors for economic development for the tribe. So they can actually increase their customer base now because they have the certification, and more importantly, they can increase access to healthy local foods. Often state and federal food programs mandate what kinds of foods can be served in their facilities. So this was a barrier for the farm before they got this certification, but now that they're an approved source, they can actually sell to those federally funded tribal programs and schools. Benefits of food policy, like I mentioned, the farm can expand their customer base through this certification now. So they can reach not only on-reservation customers, but they can also expand to larger markets off-reservation. It allows them to address possibilities of food contamination now that they have the certification, and it increases accountability and awareness among their staff about how to operate in safe and sanitary facilities. And more importantly, it helps the farm achieve their mission, which is to increase access to healthy foods for local communities and really increasing food system infrastructure and boosting the local tribal economy. Food policies also help the farm benefit the community in more cultural ways. So it helps the farm provide those culturally important foods for community members. So the foods that are tied to many of our stories and our songs and traditions. And it also, the farm has done a really great job in revitalizing Apache farming and agriculture. So that the ways that our people actually farmed long time ago, and it also helps the farm to kind of foster the next generation of farmers. So this is a picture of some 5th grade students that we brought to the farm, and they're learning about the traditional ways of planting corn without a tractor. Challenges of food policy. So there are a lot of challenges that the farm has experienced. First of all, there are no tribal food policies with our tribe, so that in itself is a major challenge. So the farm is working to kind of engage and gain more support from our tribal leadership, so the tribal council, and ways that they can help the farm grow. There's also a need for data. We have very limited data on food insecurity in our communities, so that's a major problem. The cost to become certified, so actual certification and being able to show that the farm is following these food policies, it can become very expensive. And so if tribes are interested in kind of getting their farms or gardens certified, that can be a very expensive process. And then although the farm, a lot of everything that they grow is organic, they don't have that organic certification, so they can't market their products like that yet. And that is another very expensive cost for the farm. So these are all challenges that they've experienced. Actual implementation of those food policies is also challenging. It can really create unnatural environments and take away from those important processes and practices that are important to our communities and a lot of Native communities. So after the farm got their certification, the community members cannot access the garden anymore, which is kind of ridiculous because that's how the kind of the community members see what the great work that the farm is doing, and like people could actually pick their food, but now they can't do that anymore after this certification. So that's been a major frustration for the farm staff. There are also federal government policies that may not recognize tribal knowledge on agriculture. So one of the kind of, I can't understand this policy, but after the certification, the farm cannot use harvested rainwater on their garden anymore, which is kind of hard to understand because it rains anyway on the garden, but they can't use the water that they've been harvesting. So they're just really interesting things that they've experienced with these policies. So this is a quote from the First Nations Development Institute, and they've been really great in supporting Ndebikia. So it says, assuming power to localize your food supply affords opportunities to regain control of the most significant assets possessed by Native communities. Conscious management of food supplies affords opportunities for tribal use of land, deliberate control of health, sustainability of the environment, and maintenance of revitalization of cultural integrity. So it really gives a good idea of all this work being done in tribal communities around food and food systems and why that's important, because it's not just, you know, providing nourishment and feeding ourselves, it's actually, you know, it is like food sovereignty is tribal sovereignty, so allowing tribes to actually use their land to benefit their people and their people's health and sustainability of the environment, which is what tribes have always done, use the environment sustainably, and really bringing back those cultural processes that go along with food, and since food is very intimately tied with the environment. So that's a lot of the great work that the tribal farm has been doing. These are acknowledgments. Really want to acknowledge the tribal farm staff. They're really the driving force behind all this work. So they're doing a lot of great work for our tribe. And we'll have questions later.